Okay. No. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
We're going to be talking about the size of insects that are mutter rasa. As I was working this through, I realized there really is a connection to today being December 26th. Anybody who wants to know the connection can ask me. Okay. As you probably, you all know, that over the past couple of hundred years, scientists have found that there are all types of living things that are well beyond what anybody can see. All types of microbes and microorganisms, all kinds of tiny things that people can see. And when science first discovered this, when they first became aware of this, there was a little bit of a discussion in the Poskim as to whether those tiny insects, or tiny living items, should be considered usher or not. And it's basically assumed that they're mutter. Okay, there's no iser if a person eats some microorganism that's there or something that he can't see with his eyes. It's assumed that that's mutter. Okay, that's not what we're going to be speaking about. Okay, we're going to take down as an assumption that those things those mutter. There are those who still think that they may be usher. We're working with the assumption that those things are mutter. We're going to talk about a more subtle question. And as we go through it, we're going to see that this question really has a lot of applications. As we talk about some of the examples, you'll begin to understand the applications that it has. And really what we're going to talk about is that there are really two completely different camps out there, two completely different views of how to look at this question. And a lot of what you hear in the world about things with insects or without insects very much depends on the question we're going to talk about. And there are going to be three questions we have to answer. We're working with the assumption that something that's microscopic is, you don't have to worry about it. That's not something that you're allowed to eat that. But when we're trying to decide that a person can see, we're saying something that's visible, that's the thing that you're not allowed to eat. Okay, well, the first question is, whose vision should we use? Which person is it that we should look at and say, that's the person, his vision is the one that counts. That thing is too tiny, no, that doesn't count. But that thing is big enough that it does count. That's our first question. Second question is, if you have an insect that you could, something that's alive, and you could tell that it's an insect because it, you could see that it's got appendages, okay? You know, dirt doesn't have, you know, legs coming in and whiskers coming out of it. So you could tell that it's alive, or you could tell it's alive because it's crawling around. Okay, dirt doesn't move. So it doesn't move in the way that things crawl, that move that are alive.
But not that a dead insect is automatically...
So the question is, well, what happens... our second question is, what happens if it was alive, and we could tell that it was alive because it had appendages or it was running around, and then it dropped dead. And now I can't tell anymore that it's alive. Okay? So now, there's nothing that I look at this thing, and all I see is a piece of dirt. To me, it looks like just a piece of dirt. So, but if I would have looked at it yesterday, I would have been able to see that it was alive, but now I can't see. So is that thing okay or it's not okay? In other words, I could see it, but I can't tell what it is. When I look at it today, I can't tell what it is. And the third question is, what happens if it was never identifiable? The second group was something that yesterday I could have seen it moving, but now it died, or now it got stepped on, and you don't see it moving. But what happens if I could have never seen it moving? It is a living thing, and I could see it. I could see the spot, but there was no way I could have ever told that it was moving. Okay, that's our third question. Is that one mutter or usher? Okay, so the first question that I ask you, which is, whose vision should we use, seems like the most straightforward. Okay, we'll see it as we get on that it's not so straightforward. And that is, that usually, for all rules of the Torah, we follow an average person. We don't look at, we want to know whose vision should we consider. We don't first consider the person who's got, above average vision or below average. Okay, if there would be a question on the Sefer Torah, if two letters are touching each other, okay, and we want to know if two letters are touching. If they're touching, the Torah is possible. If they're not touching, then you can use that Sefer Torah. If we wanted to know who to use, we would bring someone up with average vision. That's what we would want. We don't want someone who can't see, and we don't want someone who can see such fine examples of things. And therefore, that's what we use. Rabbi Shachter once told me, he once walked into shul, and there was a person who said to him, you know, my tefillin are not square. The width and the length and the width of your tefillin have to be the same size. So Rabbi Shachter said, okay, let's see. They pulled out a piece of paper and puts it next to the guy's tefillin. He says, okay, this side is this long, and this side is, same length. They're both the same. The person said, no, they're not the same. He says, I'm a dentist. And I spend my whole day focusing on people's teeth, on these tiny little things in their mouth. So when I look at the tefillin, I can tell that that side is longer than that side. I don't need anything. I can tell on my own that that side is bigger. To which Rabbi Shechtel said, doesn't make a difference. You have above average vision. Doesn't count what you see. To an average person, I'm an average person. Average people can't see that there's any difference. So it doesn't make a difference that you see that. We look like an average person. So the simple thing we would assume is that vision goes by an average person. Of course, a person who needs glasses to bring their vision back to regular, that's considered average, and you have to do it in good light, and things like that, but within the range of vision, we look at the person with average vision. Okay, that would, we would think, as we go on, we'll see, it's not everybody thinks of what I just said, abuses what I just said, but we would think that it goes by, the simple understanding that it goes by an average vision. Okay. I'm going to now, to help us put things into perspective, I'm going to give you, as we go to the other questions as to what size is mutter aser, I want to break down the sizes of insects into five sizes. Okay, five grades of insects. Okay, just to help you put things in perspective. The first is grade A. Okay, the first is insects like, I'm not talking about big mosquitoes. I'm talking about things that are a small fly or an ant. If you looked at vegetables, I have only one sample with it, but if you look at lettuce and you see a nice size aphids, nice size bugs that are on the reasonably size, that anybody who looks at it can tell that the thing is an insect. Okay? If there was an ant crawling across the table, everybody here who in this room could tell that thing was also, and of course, that's no good. The second is, many of you probably know that in New York, there's a big to-do about whether you're allowed to drink water. Okay, because there are bugs that are in the water. Okay, those bugs are called copepods. And they're in the water, in the drinking water. New York, the reason has to do with that New York has a special exemption that their water is so pure that they don't need to filter their water. And therefore, they have insects in there. They have these things called copepods that are in there that are not, and just about every other municipality, they're filtered out. So they have these things called copepods. Copepods, if I put copepods here on the table, nobody here in the room would think that they were a bug. Okay? They look like pieces of dandruff. Okay? If you looked at it, you would never think that the thing was alive. However, if you've ever seen one alive, when they're alive, they're very obvious that they're alive. Okay? They jump around in a very unusual way. It's very obvious that that thing is not a piece of dandruff. Okay? Dandruff doesn't do that. But once you've seen it alive, the shape of it once it's alive, you would then recognize it even when it wasn't alive. Okay? So this grade is something that if you saw it by itself, you would never realize that it was an insect, or that it was alive. Once you've seen it alive, it's obvious afterwards that it is. Just for an example for yourself, imagine if you saw a dead cat. Okay? You'd all know that the thing was a cat. Okay? You don't have to be told that's a cat, because you're used to that shape and the way it looks. Tells you, that thing is a cat. Even though you'd be looking from a distance and it wasn't alive, you would know that thing was a cat. And here also the copepods of that. And most people assume that this second class is also usher. Okay, once you've seen it alive and you know through nothing, no unusual skills, just by looking at it, you were able to tell it was alive, most people assume that's usher. And in fact, that was one of the points of contention, was maybe the water, you can't drink the water because people can tell that they're alive once you've seen them alive. Of course, the other side, just to digress for a second, the other side of that is that there are, 8 million people living in New York, okay, and for the past 100 years, they've had copepods in the water. So think of how many millions of people have lived through that, okay, and none of them, except for some from Jews, are aware that there are copepods in the water, right? How can you say that they can all see the bug when there's millions and millions of people, right? There's going to be, how many people are going to be in Times Square next week, and not one of them is going to occur to them that there's bugs in their water. They can look at the glasses of water 100 times and never see them. Okay, that's their own argument. Okay, we're off the hook from that. Okay, we live over here. The third is, it's not the same. But if when I go to a company and say to them, we want to clean your vegetables, or to a restaurant, we want to clean the vegetables before you eat them. They say, we don't have bugs in our vegetables. When you show them the bugs, they see it. They don't have any questions. When you open up the letter and say, but look, you missed this, and look at this, and look at this, they say, whoa, they're very surprised. They've looked at it 100 times, but when they see it, they see it. Over here, You can look at 100 glasses of water and you won't see anything. Okay, an average person will look at it, will stare it in the face and won't see anything. Okay, our third class is insects that, if you train yourself through magnification, you use a microscope to teach yourself to recognize small things, you will begin to see these insects even without magnification. That is to say, if you look at lettuce and you're trying to find bugs in lettuce, and I find a spot on my lettuce, I see a little spot just sitting on the side of the lettuce. So I pull out a magnifying glass, we call it a loop, a jeweler's loop, and I look at this thing and I say, that one is awesome. That one's not a bug. That's a piece of dirt. With time, people who do that begin to develop a sense of vision beyond average. They see things with their own eyes. Now they don't need a loop anymore. After doing that for a while, they don't need it anymore. And they can see things that no one in this room can see. Okay, I was at a demonstration with about as many people as this. Somebody came up and he said, I'm going to show you insects. He took an insect that was on a white piece of paper, a white piece of cloth, and it was circled. And they passed it around the room. Okay. And there were about as many people as there are here in the room. Okay. Not one, okay. All the people in the room could not, no one recognized it as an insect, except for people who had been spent a long time using magnification to look at insects. Those people were able to recognize by themselves. Those people who look at it don't, it's a very slow process that they begin to have such great vision. And when they look at it, they say, how could you not see it? Of course everyone could see it. Don't you see that one's got two stripes on it? He's on his back and he's on his front. Can't you tell that one's missing a leg on the left side? And I'm like, most people are like, I don't know what you're talking about. It's just a piece of dirt. The piece of dirt's got stripes on it? Of course he does. And to them, their vision has become, they become so used to this, and it happens so slowly, that they don't recognize, even that they realize things that most people don't see. That's a third class. Those are the kind of bugs. I don't have a sample with me. It wouldn't work anyhow in such a big crowd. And I don't have, on strawberries, there are two types of bugs. There are bugs that most of the people here would recognize, and then there's something called thrips larvae. A thrips larvae are these tiny, tiny thrips. A thrip is a long, straight insect. Excuse me. And thrips larvae, the reason why most people don't ever see them is because when they become frightened, they hide underneath the seeds. You know strawberries have seeds on them? Okay, well, those seeds are attached. Okay, they're stuck on. So there's a little bit of space between the part that's attached and the rest of the thing, and they hide under there. Okay, trying to give you an idea of how small they are. Okay, the seed is not so big to start with. Underneath the seed, that's where they hide. Okay, and the seed is not hovering over there. There's something attaching it to the strawberry. So that's how small they are that they can hide under there. They're really, really tiny. Okay, and if you see them alive, they're obvious that they're alive. That's true. When you see them running across the strawberry, then obviously they're alive. But anybody else who would see it, I would bet that anybody in this room who would look at it when it was not moving would not think it was alive. But people who have trained their eyes are able to see, they see appendages. They could tell you literally how many legs the thing has, and none of us here in this room would see anything. It just looks like another piece of dirt. So that's a fourth group. A third group. Okay, the fourth group, for this one, I have some samples for you guys. I'm sorry that this fruit stores were not open yesterday, but they're open today. You can pass them around. Okay, what you're going to see here is something called citrus scale. Okay, it's not common in the United States. It's not common because it doesn't look very nice. It doesn't look very nice. You believe me, if you look at it, you're not going to see a bug. Don't worry about it. But you're just going to see what there is. It's called citrus scale. It doesn't look very nice. And because of that, people who sell citrus fruit make sure that they don't exist. The only places where you'll find it in the United States that you'll find citrus scale are on juice oranges. Those are not sold to people who want to eat them. They're not meant to be so presentable. So these are, in fact, juice oranges. On juice oranges, they don't pay so much attention to getting rid of the citrus scale because no one's really looking at it. People are just making juice out of it. Okay. What are citrus scale? Okay. Well, citrus scale is as follows. What? A smiley? Yeah, okay. Citrus scale is, there are these tiny bugs that attach themselves onto citrus fruit. Citrus fruit, in the peel of citrus fruit, is something called citrus oils. In this case, it would be orange oil or grapefruit oil. And those oils have a very strong taste to them. In fact, I don't know if I should tell you this, but I won't. Okay, the orange juice that you get that's not from concentrate, that's what we have in the back, the not from concentrate orange juice. Well, those oranges, how do they squeeze oranges all year round? The oranges don't grow all year round. They only grow in the winter. Right? And they get some in the summer, maybe from Chile, you know, when it's the wrong season. But how do they get oranges all year round? So they store them. They keep the oranges in storage for a long, long time. Oranges are not really meant to be stored for a long time. So the oranges that they're squeezing in July don't really taste very much like anything. Okay, so what makes the oranges that they squeeze in July taste like orange juice is because the peel has oil in it, and they remove the oil from the peel, and by putting that oil in, it tastes really good like oranges. So when it tastes, oh, that was a really good geschmacka drink of orange juice, that means the peels were really good. Okay, that's what you're drinking is peels. It was sugary water with peel. But okay, if you like it, you like it.
Don't they freeze, like squeeze it, freeze?
No, but if it's not for concentrate, no, they don't. They squeeze it fresh. They squeeze it in the middle of July. There's not one orange on the tree out there. But they're squeezing it fresh, and then, but they're desiccating, so they
freeze it.
They freeze the frozen, the squeezed juice?
The squeeze is not the concentrate. The fresh stuff they freeze.
I don't think
so. No, it's pasteurized. Anyhow. It's also pasteurized. Yes, orange juice is pasteurized.
Correct.
It's heated up to a certain extent. The question is, are they killing these bugs that you're talking about?
We're not the bugs yet. Wait, I'm just telling you about oranges. Just trying to discourage you from going to the back.
What are you squeezing?
Okay.
What are they squeezing? If there's no oranges, what are they squeezing?
They hold oranges in storage.
So these are the ones that are in storage from July that were...
They picked them off the tree in December. Okay, and it sits there in cold storage. But you know, it's not meant to do that. I mean, they may keep it from spoiling, but it's not really holding its flavor well. Okay, so these insects called citrus scale find their way onto the bug. Onto the peel of the fruit, and they stick out. I forgot what the word is. They have something that sticks out of them that pokes a what?
A proboscis.
Okay, sticks into the fruit, and then this citrus scale does not move. It's there for life. Okay, he parks himself and he's there. He's not going anyplace. In order to protect itself, it excretes a waxy substance. It also sheds its skin every so often, and that builds up around the outside of the bug, of the insect, and it creates a coating around it. And what you see on the fruit is not the bug. You see the waxy coating that it put on, around itself, that it excreted to protect itself from being eaten by other animals that would come onto the bug. Okay. Well,
so each of those black dots that we saw on that fruit?
Underneath, actually, that's the wax covering.
Exactly, but
underneath there is a bug. Wait a second, it gets better. And then what happens is after a while, at a certain point, it's time for the citrus scale to lay eggs, to lay, give birth, okay? So it gives birth to about 10 baby citrus scales, okay? And they all fit underneath that little dot, okay? They all fit under there, okay? They all sit, mommy takes care of all of them, okay? And then when it's time, each of them goes on their merry way, finds another orange or whatever fruit to attach themselves to, and they park themselves there for life. Okay, that's how they live. Okay, so it has legs when it's born. It has little legs on it. When it finds its place, it sheds its legs because it doesn't need them anymore. It got to its place. It parks itself in that place, and it's there for good. Okay, so those citrus scales that you're looking at, that you could see on those oranges, you could see them. Okay, even the greatest experts can't see that they're alive. There's nothing recognizable about them throughout their life, but everyone could see them. In Eretz Yisrael, these are much more common. They're not so particular about how the fruit looks. So there's much more common even on eating oranges. Excuse me. So those things, you could see them. Everyone could see them. But here, even the people who are specially trained can't tell that it's an insect. It doesn't look like anything. It just looks like a dot. Okay? It doesn't look like a bruise. If you look on the oranges, there are some bruises to the oranges.
Looking at the bug.
You're looking at the wax covering that's on top of the bug. It's actually a shiloh. It's actually a shiloh whether the wax coating is usher also. If the bug is usher, the wax coating that's excreted from the bug might also be usher also. But
how do they know it's citrus scale versus dirt?
How do they know? Well, okay, what it is that farmers care about citrus scale because it ruins the appearance of their fruit. And they care about it because of what it does to the leaves. People who are involved in agriculture pay attention to citrus scale. As a result, some rabbis got a hold of this and figured out that those things are citrus scale. So if you go to a farmer, if you go to Florida and you say, which is a citrus scale, he can pick it out in a second because he's trying to get rid of it. It's a significant point for him. There isn't anybody... When I was in TEDS this morning, believe me, there's nobody in TEDS who could care less that that's a bunk. But from the appearance of it, he doesn't like it. It doesn't look as good as the other, next orange.
Are there other black dots that are not
bunks? Yeah, sure. Some of those things are... Some of the marks that are on those oranges are just bruises to the orange. It got banged up. You just... From just sitting on a tree and getting banged around like your ass.
Do you know the difference?
What?
Do you know the difference between the...
Yeah, so I circled a few ones that are insects that I believe are citrus scale. I can't say that I'm the world's expert, but ones that I think are citrus scale as opposed to ones that are not. Okay, so now this is a class of bugs that you could see it. You could see it, look at it straight in the eye, but there isn't anybody who could tell that thing is an insect. Okay, but you can recognize it. You can most definitely see it there. You see something, what it is... If I told you and I taught you that that's a bug, okay, you could believe me, but there isn't anybody who could recognize it. Okay. And our lowest grade of insects is the ones that are microscopic. For example, if you, in order to make vinegar, you have to take alcohol. The alcohol is, if you could use the word, eaten by something called Acetobacter. It's a microorganism. It eats it and converts the alcohol into vinegar. Okay. Well, nobody can see Acetobacter. No one could see, let me say that again, one Acetobacter. You could see a whole bunch of them together as a group. You would just see as a frothy substance in making the vinegar, but you wouldn't see one. No one could even see it. This one, at least, you could see. On the citrus scale, you could see it. No one could see Acetobacter. Now, if there's another thing in vinegar. It's called vinegar eels. Okay, any fisherman might know about that. It's something called vinegar eels. Those are very visible. Okay, those look like thin little... When you see, place can talk about bugs in vinegar, they're not talking about Acetobacter. They're talking about vinegar eels. Okay, it's like little, little worms. Okay, that grow in vinegar. Okay, those are nice size, relatively nice size. People use them for fishing. They use them as bait for fishing. Okay, when the place can talk about worms in vinegar, they're not talking about Acetobacter. Okay, Acetobacter is the microorganism that grows in vinegar, and that's microscopic. And as we said, everybody holds that those are multiple. Okay. So, what we're talking about, now that I've told you these five groups, we're talking about two of these five groups. We're talking about the thrips larvae, the bugs on the strawberries, where some people who have trained their eyes are able to see them, but all the rest of us are not able to see them, or recognize them. We all see them, but they can recognize them as an insect, and we can't. And the citrus scale, as an example, that are on these oranges, that everyone can see them, but nobody can tell what they are. Okay. Are those things mutter or usher? Anybody have any thoughts before I move on? Yes?
I thought that a person is trained to see something that no one else can see, so then his vision is not average.
Okay, and therefore?
Should be mutter.
So he's... Jesus said, it's obvious. Didn't I tell you we should go with an average person's vision? Shouldn't we use an average... Well, average people... let's say all of us in here are average, have average vision. Okay, so then if none of us can see it, so why should it be us? We should go by average person's vision.
Okay.
On the other hand, he's raised himself to a higher level of vision, and he can determine for himself, he knows that this is a bug.
Okay.
For himself, but for not the next guy.
So you say...
He knows, but now he's unfortunately raised himself.
His vision is better.
So now, what does he do? He knows it's a bug.
Okay, so he said, this guy himself can't eat it. All the rest of us are okay.
Yeah.
So he can't eat because he knows that it's a bug. And you should really know, it's very interesting because the people who are like that, who could tell, who can recognize these things, it hurts them. I don't believe it hurts them on a religious perspective. It hurts them on a personal level. How could you eat that? I could see that it's got three stripes on the back of it and it's alive. How could you think of eating that thing? A person like you must have lost your marbles. How could you do that? I could see it. Okay, that's okay. You say that. Yeah, go ahead.
It could be mutter to him, but if it's mutter for everybody else, it might be mutter to him.
Okay, so we got an argument here whether it's even mutter for this guy. Okay, yeah. Nobody wants to tell him why they think it might be. Oh, sir? Okay, go ahead.
To be clear, the only thing we're considering is size, not like what's inside of them. Like,
what do you mean, what's inside of them?
System or like.
So the answer is when microscopic bugs are first discovered, people realize that there are things that we can't see. Everyone at that time said, all rabbis at that time said is, only things that are visible are awesome. that the criteria is whether they're visible or not visible. Can the average person see it or could they not see it? So the fine detail is how many cells it has and how sophisticated is that insect is not what made the difference. It's that, and we're going to get to it in this hour. I'll tell you, there's a rule. Okay, the rule is called Lo Nitna Torah L'Malachei Asharis. Hashem gave the Torah to humans. With us, we're expected to follow the rules. So the rules have to be things that are within range that we're supposed to do. Something that's beyond an average person being able to see. Obviously, Hashem didn't mean me to avoid that thing, because what would He have wanted from me? It's not a game. It's not like trying to trick me into doing the wrong thing. So if he told me don't eat insects, it must be something that I can.
But there's some things we never consider as insects, like bread mold. Right? Everybody can see it.
Right.
We're never going to think of that.
So the reason is because those are microscopic in the sense that a single piece of bread mold, no one can even see. You can't even see a single one of them. There's yeast in your refrigerator, but if the individual yeast bacteria, no one could see. No one. You can only see it because there's 100 of them clumped together. It's considered invisible because you would never see one of them. The fact that we put pile 100 on top of each other doesn't. You still can't see it. You still can't see one of them.
And that's but, still more than not terrible malchus. People don't know how many of them there are.
But you have nothing, no reason to think that thing is a bug. The fact that one of them on the microscope you knew was alive, but one of them you couldn't even see. But the citrus scale, that one you could see it. There's only one of them under there. And by now it's dead because
I don't know that. I'm just saying, like, okay. But an average person doesn't know how many citrus scales there are in a little bat.
Right.
Just like he doesn't know how many pieces of bread mold there are in a bread mold.
Okay. So you're saying, and therefore it should be mutter.
I don't know what they're
okay.
I'm just saying, I don't see a
okay.
difference. Okay. Give me thoughts.
Okay, so I'm asking. Okay, so now, so far I haven't heard anybody who's come up with a reason why it should be us. In fact, if it'll help you with some names, quite a number of prominent Pesachim say that those things are mutter. Okay, that these insects are mutter. That should make you feel good. Okay, I didn't finish that. Okay, those people include Reb Chaim Oizer, Rav Osner, and the OU two Pesachim, Rav Belsky, Rav Shachter, who all think that this is mutter. Okay. These things are mutter. On the other hand, okay, Rabbi Yashiv holds that these things are usher, that these insects are usher. Rabbi Shem Zalman, if we get to it, we'll see time-wise if we get to it, in the Maram Mekhaimus I'll give you in a minute, you'll see that Rabbi Shem Zalman in Shmir Shabbos Kechasa goes back and forth about whether this is mutter or usher. He said he thought it was mutter, but then he heard from the Chazanish that maybe it's usher, and if we have time, we'll look at it to see exactly what it says there, and whether he really was talking about the Shadonai. It's not clear at all. But he was talking about citrus scale, and the question is whether what he decided was mutter or usher. There's a question. If you read it simply, it says he thought it was mutter, and then he heard from the Chazanish that it's usher. But we'll see if we get to that source in a minute. And really, this has come to being two, if I could use the word, two different... Yes.
Does Canterbury include the
copepods? No, I'm not including copepods. I'm not. Because the copepods would drop different in that once you swallow them alive, even average people would be able to recognize them. So I put those into a little bit of a different class. Okay. Those are more easy to say that those are ushers. There, I mean, Rav David Feinstein brought up this point when he spoke about copepods. He says, once we saw it alive, it's not a question of it being microscopic. So that's a little bit of a different class. Okay. Even some of the people whose names I mentioned who think that these bugs are mutter thought that those bugs are ushers. Okay. So it's a little bit of a different class. But what it's turned in effect is into there are two camps, okay? If I could use that word, okay? The Israeli Poskim, led by the okay. What it is, I don't know if you know this, you don't know it, you probably don't know this, but there are experts in insects, in halachic issues of insects, and in Eretz Yisrael, the person who's the biggest expert, who's probably the world's biggest expert, or from them, his name is Rav Moshe Vaya. Okay, Rav Moshe Vaya. He's a world expert. He knows the halacha. He knows the metzias. He knows everything about this. I mean, literally, he knows everything about insects that there is to know. He's written a number of svarim on it. He speaks about it publicly, and he promotes the position that it's usher, that these insects are usher. Okay, and most Israeli hashgachas follow that, and even some Americans follow. American people who teach about insects, etc., follow that line of view. Here in America. The person who's the Rebbe for a lot of the other people who know about bugs is Rabbi Gissinger in Lakewood. Rabbi Gissinger holds that these are mutter. Okay, just to put things into perspective, those are basically, we have our, if I can use the word, our two camps over here. The people who follow Ravaya and the Israeli Mahalach would say that these bugs are awesome. And then we have those who follow Rabbi Gissinger, and the bulk of the American Hashkachas and the people involved in those things who say that they're mutter. And I mention it because when you hear there's an issue with...
Question?
Hold on a second. You've heard that there's two different ways of checking strawberries. Okay? There are those who, everyone says, cut off the top and rinse it off. Okay, got it. And maybe look at it to see if there are no bugs. But there are those who say, and then put it into soapy water and scrub it in soapy water or peel it or other kinds of interesting things to do to get rid of it. Okay? The reason for that difference is, why do some people say this and some people say this? It's because some people are worried about, some of those people are concerned with these thrips larvae that if you would see, you wouldn't recognize. And therefore, the only way to get rid of them is to do a more serious processing to the vegetable to get rid of it. The people who say to do the lighter job is because those are really mutter, then they're only worried about the larger bugs, which come up more easily. Well, cut them off the top and rinsing it off, you've cleaned them away. Okay, that's the difference between them, a practical difference. It was a to-do a couple of years ago about raisins. It ended up being mutter for a different reason, not to do with this, but the bugs in those raisins were of this type of a size that, one of my kids was eating raisins the other day, they didn't see any bugs in there. Okay, most people who look at raisins would never see any bugs in there, but certain people would see lots of bugs in raisins. Okay, most of us wouldn't see it. They're mutter for a different reason. Anyhow, the topic today. Okay, when issues come up about insects, a lot of times you will see that the issue revolves around the size. If I feel that this size is usher, then therefore I have to say do X, Y, and Z. And if I think that size is mutter, then you can get away with something else. You don't have to do that. Okay, did you want to say something?
The science says that those bugs are usher, and they're just on the camp. Are they saying it's usher deraisa or derabonin?
Okay. I'm going to ask you to... I'll answer this question. I was going to talk about it later. We'll talk. We're going to run out of time. We're never going to get to it later. Anyhow, so I'm going to tell you. No, it's worth it saying anyhow. Okay. In Shmir Shabbos Kachasar, when it speaks about whether the citrus scale is mutter or usher. Okay.
Where is Shmir Shabbos talking about? I was wondering.
Oh, because it's a question in Hilchos Shabbos about taking them off. Uh-huh. It's in a footnote. You'll see. Just hold a second. So when he talks about it, there's a big difference between a citrus scale and most of the other Shabbos we're talking about as follows. The easiest way to explain it is as follows. If you look at the Siman and Shulchan Aruch about bugs, okay, there are, 15, 16, 17 halachas in that Siman Pei Daled. The first half of the Siman is about which bugs are mutter or asur. And the second half is if I don't know if there's bugs in a vegetable, what do I have to do? Okay, that's the second half. Those are not the same question. If there's a citrus scale in front of me, that's a question of a deraisa. If I eat it, I'm over. How many laven deraisa for eating that bug? That's a question of a deraisa. If I have a head of lettuce and I don't check it, and I don't know if there are bugs inside of it, that's only an issa derabanan. Why is it only issa derabanan? Because most lettuce does not have bugs in it. Only some lettuce has bugs in it. Midderaisa, I could say, is roi viz that doesn't have bugs in it. I could eat it. Okay. It's only a derabanan that says, since you could easily check it and get the bugs out of it, you're mechuyev to get it out. Okay. On a deraisa, the deraisa says is, I could say most lettuce doesn't have bugs in it. I can eat it. It's only issa derabanan. Now, if I see the bug in front of my eyes, okay, if I take off a piece of celery and I look at the bottom and I see that there are bugs, the celery's got lots of, depending where you buy it, celery can have lots of bugs in it. I see the bug there. It's awesome in deraisa to eat it. It's how many laven for eating that bug. If I bite into lettuce and I didn't check it beforehand, I'm being over issa derabanan. Because the Chachamim said, check first to see if there's an insect in there, because there's often enough that there is one that you have to check for. It's only issa derabanan. So that's important as far as a citrus scale, because the question that they were talking about was a question of a deraisa. They're holding the orange in their hand. You want to know, now what happens is when you peel the orange, the some of that scale gets onto your hand. If you would now eat the orange with that dirt on your hand, with that citrus scale on your hand, you're eating the bug. Okay, when you peel the orange by hand, not with a knife, you peel the orange by hand, it gets onto your hand. When you now eat the orange, it's going to get into your mouth. So that's a question of a deraisa. It may be that you might be machmir about citrus scale because you're talking about a question of a deraisa. When we talk about lettuce, when we talk about checking cauliflower, that's only a question of a drabbanon, because I'm only mukhuri with drabbanon to check the thing. If only with the rice, I could say most cauliflower was okay. Yes?
Is there, just like the concept of a mabakon isul hatfila, is there a concept by a bug that you're not allowed to hatfila take it out of its state of being a beria and turn it into being mush where it's there's no shear anyway?
Yes. Yes, that is correct.
You are not allowed to do that.
That's not a deraisa. Deraisa means is that the first half of the siman of Shulchan Aruch is about the deraisa, which is if the bug is crawling across the table, can I eat it or not? Okay, that's the shot. I see it in front of me, can I eat it or can I not eat it? When I have a food that I don't know if there's a bug inside of it, which is what most of us do, most of us don't purposely bite into the bug. Most of us are looking at a food saying, maybe there are bugs in there. Should I check it or not? If I don't check it, I'm being Arvanius and Drabon. Okay, I have to just say, there are certain vegetables that are so infested that it's also with the rice to eat them. Okay, it's not so common in America, it's not so common to have vegetables that are so infested. Okay, most of it is Drabon. Most of it is Drabon of Midrabon, am I Mukhlif to check it or not? Okay. Okay, so nobody yet told me why it should be also. Okay, but in fact, there are prominent people who think that it is usher. Okay, so what I'm going to try to explain to you, in my understanding, that there's three ways of looking at it. It could be mutter, or usher, or a middle view. And I think the middle view is the most, I don't want to say it's the correct view, because most American person hold that it's mutter. But it's the most reasonable way to understand why it should be usher. And that is as follows. When I first mentioned to you that some of these insects, you could see them when they're alive. Because when they're alive, they're walking around. So you said, well, if it's walking around, then of course it's us. I can tell it's alive then. Okay, now it dropped dead. So people said, wait a second. Why did it come up there? Because it dropped dead. What happened to it? It used to be usher, right? At 10 o'clock, it was walking around, and everyone could see it, and it was usher. Okay, now at 10:15, someone stepped on it. Okay, and now you can't recognize it anymore. Why did it become mutter? If Hashem doesn't want me to eat it, what happened to the thing? Why did it become mutter? It was usher a minute ago, so what happened then? Now it died. So it died, so it's not moving. They went to sleep. I mean, that means now it's moving, it's usher. And now it goes to sleep, it's mutter. And now it starts walking again. It wakes up, it starts walking again, so it's usher again. Well, what's going on over here? How does that make sense? Do you think if I take a vegetable, and I stick it in the freezer, so I killed the bugs, and now they became mutter? How does that work? So what's going on over here? So you told me that it's going to be mutter because I can't see it. How can it be mutter? What happened? It used to be usher. 10 minutes ago it was usher. What happened to it? So the answer is, well, the beginnings of the answer up to that question is, the reason why it should be mutter is because l'nit n'tar l'malachi asharis. Torah was given to people who are able to judge with their own regular faculties. I mean, not with magnification, and not by super training of their eyes. They're supposed to be able to judge things on their own. So if I'm not able to tell that it's alive, what does Hashem want from me? If he didn't give me the mitzvah to trick me into being over on it, he wasn't trying to catch me and say, ha ha, bugs are going to die and you're going to be stuck eating them. He wasn't trying to trick me, so he obviously didn't care that I should eat these. And we'll talk why in a second. How, if we get to it, why that should be true. But obviously, when nit n'tar l'malachi asharis means not just that if it's microscopic I could eat it, but means that even if I can't recognize it, what was I supposed to do? How could I avoid it? I want to do the right thing. I don't want to eat bugs. How am I supposed to know? Until a minute ago, if you would have picked up those oranges, you would have all said, there's just a bunch of dirt on the orange. So what does Hashem want from you? He wants all of you to read research reports from universities to find out, well, hold on one second, which of those dots is mutter and which is usher? That's what Hashem wants from you? So does he expect me to be such an expert? So that's a reason why I say that it's mutter. That is to say, well, now let's speak for a second. Some people will say, it's mutter because Hashem didn't expect me to know better. And others will say, a drop different. And that is, it's not mutter, but you're an oinus. Really, Hashem wanted you to not eat it. It was crawling a minute ago. When it was crawling, you could have recognized it. Now, when it dropped dead and you can't see it anymore, you can't recognize it anymore, it's not mutter, but you're an oinus. You're not held responsible for not eating it. Not that it's mutter, just you're not responsible because what do you want from my life? How was I supposed to know that it was there? So I'm just not held responsible. Now, but there's a difference between being mutter and being an oinus. Oinus means it's against my will. I had no choice. I'm not responsible for it.
So
The difference between those is, the difference between whether it's mutter or it's an oinus is, what happens if I have some way to find out which things are the bugs that Hashem doesn't want me to eat? I have some superhuman way of finding out from it. Would it be a good thing for me to do that? Is there any reason for me to try to do that? I'm not saying you have to do it. So is there anything good about that? Is there a reason to do that? If a person get up and says, I'm going to do things to avoid eating microscopic bugs, he's wasting his time. Hashem didn't ask for those things at all. You say, you know, I'm not eating bread anymore, because I don't want to have yeast in it, because yeast is bugs. I don't want to eat bugs. It's ridiculous. You're wasting your time. There's no reason to not eat bread, because it has yeast inside of it. That's nothing. But what happens with this thing, which really, it was 10 minutes ago, it was usher. Now it died, and I'm an inus. No, what can I do? I can't avoid it. What's that thing? There is a way to avoid it. You know how you could avoid it? These guys will tell you how to wash your strawberries to avoid it. They'll tell you what to do to avoid it. They'll tell you if you buy yourself a loop, you could avoid it. You're not required to have a loop. You're not required to have magnification to check for it. But we're not talking about magnification of things that were never usher. We're talking magnification of things that are possibly usher, and you're just an oinus on it. You're just an oinus. Well, if I'm an oinus, is it maybe needless chasidus? Is it maybe a commendable thing to avoid it? Hashem really doesn't want me to eat it. I'm just stuck. He's not going to hold me responsible for eating it. But maybe that would be commendable to avoid it. Okay, so
Can it even go beyond that?
That what?
That if there's a possibility, you're no longer an oinus.
So, it's possible to say that.
Just the commendable thing?
It's possible to say that, but as a rule, things that are beyond human ability, in other words, things like magnification, are not expected from you. You're not expected to do that. For those of you who are chulin, the Gemara said there's a test to see if the internal organs of an animal were trefas or not. You could cook them in a special way. The Gemara says you're not mechuyev to do that. There's things that are beyond what you're mechuyev to do. So it could be that it's usher. There may be people who hold this usher, but the more, if I can use the word, reasonable way to say that it's usher is not to say usher, but to say is that it's midas chasidus to do this. You're an oinus if you don't eat it. If you do it, it would be better to do it, and therefore, if we can go to somebody, and that guy's turned himself into an expert, and he can teach you, wash your vegetable in this way to avoid that thing which is an oinus, so maybe there's something to that. I'm not saying you're mechuyev to that, but there may be something to that. Okay, now you can all say what you want.
Wait a second. Once you see that insect moving, that just because it died, and you can't see it anymore, you actually saw that piece of fruit.
You're stuck. What about me? I didn't see it. You saw it moving, you can't eat it. Now you go out, you go to watch the football game. Okay, and I'm sitting here, I don't see anything. So am I?
But for me,
you're done. You can't see anymore. Of course not. Because you, within your regular faculties, were able to tell that it's a bug, and now you can't eat it. The fact that it died on you, it doesn't make a difference. Yeah, good.
But I do it all the time. I do this stuff all the time. I buy things that only have an OU or a C or whatever it is. And I don't know what a trapeze looks like. I've never seen it before. Therefore, why? What's the difference between this and everything else?
The difference is, when we told you that food is kosher, or we checked an animal and we said it's a trefa or it's not a trefa, we used human faculties. We just learned how to do it, and you might not know how to do it. So
but
we use
before you become experts in your
I'm not seeing trefas any different than anybody else who learns that. Anybody who's, you have to have seen it. I'm not using anything superhuman. I'm not giving MRIs to animals to decide if they have trachers on the inside. I don't do that. You know, when we milk cows, cows could be trachers when we milk them. You know, we don't give cows CAT scans to decide if there are trachers inside of them. I'm not using something superhuman. They're just the boy that pulls out the animal and looks inside whether it's a trapeze or not a trapeze. In this insect, the only person who could see it is someone who's using above average. It's not that he's more intelligent. It's not that he spent more time learning it. It's that he spent, I'm going to use a word, illegal means to find out that there are bugs in there. But as soon as he started looking under a microscope, he was doing something that's beyond the rules. You're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to do those kind of things. You're supposed to look in a regular way. With regular vision, you're supposed to see it. You have to have seen it once or twice, but once you see it, it's average.
Is there any sheet that it holds that dead bug is not within the probe?
A dead bug. It's not going to come back again. It's not sleeping. It's just dead.
And it holds that.
You don't concern yourself about that kind of thing.
No. Dead and alive is the same. Same Isser. Same Isser, dead or alive. If it's alive, it may have a drop, a little bit more Isser, having to do with the barrier, but dead or alive is the same thing. Doesn't make a difference.
In these oranges, where would the bugs be in the actual fruit itself, or it's only in the skin?
Only in the peel.
So
they're on the outside.
Problem with it.
The issue is when people peel it, when you peel it by hand, it gets onto your hand. And then if you peel the orange and then eat it without washing your hands, you will have some of that on your hand. As you pull, if you pull the part that peel by hand, think if you clean the orange, forget about it, it's an orange with peel. You get juice on, the oils come out onto your hands.
Right.
So usually if you're eating it, you may or may not care, depending on your personality. Excuse me. But it would be within reason, you would eat it anyhow and wash your hands after. Well, if you did that with the dirt, with the what looks like dirt on it, you might be eating a bubbles.
But if you don't see the dirt, if you don't see anything on your hand,
you have to look. Yes. Peel one of those oranges. Afterwards, you could peel one of the oranges and see if any of that gets onto your hands. Okay, go ahead.
These thrips down on the strawberries that live under, they never leave the food, they're always there. Is that
Neil Bay Winter? Okay, that's a different child. Not for today. Okay. Well, actually, we may get that.
That's for the...
Depending on how much patience you guys have, we may actually get to that. Okay. A little, in a very small amount.
If a person is an itis, okay, is there any concept of symptom?
That's a very good question. It's a big question whether a person who... There's something called, what he's referring to is something called timtum hale, which is, the Torah says if a person does an avera, not only do they are they going to be punished for that avera, do they actually get a punishment, say you did the wrong thing, you get punished, it negatively affects the person. The words of the Torah are, it's metamtem lev, it stuffs up your heart, it makes you more removed from Hashem. It has an effect on the person, not a physical effect, but a spiritual effect on the person, like right now. It has an effect on the person. So the question is, if I did something that I was allowed to do, I'm not responsible for it, I'm an oinus, let's say, I'm doing that thing, does that affect my neshama? Does that change me? I'm not going to be punished, but does that maybe push me further away from Hashem? It's a question. Okay, we're going to... Maybe we probably won't get that, but we might get that. Okay. Well, but let's say if that makes you understand it better. If it's going to make a timtum aleh, if it's going to affect me, well then I myself would want to avoid it. I'm saying you want to avoid it because if Hashem doesn't want it, I want to do the right thing. If someone could teach me how to do the right thing, I'll do what he said. I'll try to do above me all what I have to do. If you want to say it from this side of timtum aleh, if it's going to affect my neshama, well, what? Tomorrow, next Sunday, Rabbi Cohen's going to give a shiur on Daf HaShavua. Some people are going to understand what he says, and some people are not going to understand it. Okay? Well, the people who have timtum aleh are going to have a harder time understanding what he says. So I want to understand this year. If I come next Sunday, I want to understand it. So I want to do things that make my heart closer to Hashem, make me more able to understand spiritual things. So wouldn't I rather do that? So that you can take it from that side, or from the side of, I want to do what Hashem wants of me. So then if I want to do that, then I want to avoid things that cause, that he doesn't want me to do. I'm annoying at this. He's not going to punish me for it. But I don't want to do the wrong thing anyhow. It's wrong anyhow. Okay, so these are our shittas here. Okay, I'm going to, even though we're only halfway there, I'm going to wind down towards the end because I know we don't have that much patience. Okay, you know what I mean? How long could you listen to me for? Okay. Through microscopic. Okay, so let's look at some proofs this way and that way. Okay, I apologize to you that about half of these pages that I'm going to give you, it's one per person, but about half of them did not copy well. So the people on this side of the room are not going to see it as well as the people on this side of the room. What? Yeah, well, actually, in this case, if you would shrink it, you'd probably see it better, because some of it was printed very interestingly, just like an outline of the letters.
Yeah,
above average vision. Okay. Okay. So we're going to look at, try to see if we could see some proofs that people suggest, that whether this should be mutter or aser. And remember, when I say the word usher, really, we're going to substitute the word usher for mitzvah chasidus. Okay? If there's something, it's hard for us to say that it's usher. Usher implies that I'm doing the wrong thing to eat that. It's hard to say that when it's not possible for me within my regular faculties to be able to know what it is. But maybe, even though it's not usher for me to eat it, but it would be a mitzvah chasidus for me to avoid it. Okay, so look at the first source that the Aruch HaShulchan says. If you could see something, b'filu dak min hadak, even if it's thin as anything, it's usher. So people say, see? Even if it's thin as anything. Okay, that's a very poor proof, because thin, I mean, everything's relative. He didn't tell you how thin he meant. Okay, what did he mean? Even if it's really, really thin, it's usher. Well, how much did he mean really, really thin, you know? If I showed you different bugs, you would think certain things that are really, really thin, that are very visible. Okay? Look at, they're not such a great proof. Look at the next one, from the Maram Chaviv. Yeah, and this is an interesting one, because in this one, people only quote the first couple of words. Okay, so you have the whole quote over here. The first couple of words say, number two, V'heim yoyser dakim mi chut hasayra. They are thinner than a piece of hair. They say, look at the bugs he's talking about. They're thinner than a piece of hair. You think anybody could recognize something that's thinner than a piece of hair? Okay, sounds pretty strong, like even the skinniest thing, as long as you could see the tusher. Okay, the only problem is that they only quote him the first half of the line. We'll keep on reading. She'ain b'hem mamish, they have nothing to them. They have like, there's nothing there, it's so thin. Zuas, harachisha, hanikarasem. Except for the movement that you could tell from the Mara Shemesh. When you look in the light, you could see them moving. Well, big deal. Of course, if you could see it moving, then of course it's tusher. Right? No one questioned that if you see the thing moving, it could be thin as a piece of hair, but hair doesn't walk across the table. Okay, so if it's thin as a piece of hair, but it's moving, everyone understands that that's awesome. Okay, that didn't get us over here. That didn't prove it. Okay, the next proof is an interesting proof. Rashi says in Erevin, number 3. Rashi says is the word sheretz, an insect in the Torah called shrotzim. Rashi says sheretz means lashon sheretz. It's called that sheretz that it runs. Okay, well, what does that mean? All kinds of animals run. So Rashi explains it is davar shu nod ba'aretz. It moves along on the ground. It's so small that you only notice it when it moves. So it's called a sheretz because in and of itself you wouldn't recognize it. You only recognize it when it moves. Okay, so when it moves you recognize it, so it's called the moving thing because it doesn't catch your attention unless it's moving. Okay, you don't notice it as being alive unless it's moving. So some want to say, well, you see that even ones that you can't tell unless they're moving, those are shrotzim. Okay? It's not a great proof because Rashi actually is not telling us what the din is if they're not moving. He's just telling us what the name of these things is, why they get their name as a sheretz. In fact, the Gemara there is talking about ants. Okay, well, ants are pretty obvious that they're alive. And what Rashi means is that if I stand up and there's an ant crawling on the floor, I wouldn't notice it. I wouldn't notice the ant until it starts moving. If there's an ant moving, I would notice it. I mean, from a distance, it doesn't catch your attention like a dog does. Like a dog doesn't have to be moving, you know that it's there. But an ant doesn't catch your attention unless it's moving. Rashi in Chumash says that sheretz includes fish and all kinds of crawling things on the ground. Other things that you don't notice them until they start moving. Doesn't mean to say is that maybe when they're not moving, they might be mutter. You're not talking about mutter rush over here. That's not what he's talking about. Okay. Now, one of the most famous proofs that people bring, we'll do it briefly, is number 4. Okay. This is a Ramah in Simen Pei Dalet. Simen Pei Dalet is a simen about insects. That's Simen Pei Dalet. So what the Ramah says, Pa'amim nimtza b'pri, kemin nekuda shchayra. Sometimes you find in a fruit a black spot. V'hu makom shemaskla tilas l'hisrakim. It's where the worm is beginning to form. V'tzarech litla min ba'amik. You have to dig deep in to root it out. The usher k'moy tilas atzvay, that it's usher just like a regular insect. So what does the Ramah say? You have a black spot. You gotta get rid of it. I see people looking at their oranges. Okay, you have a black spot.
There's black spots all over.
Black spot, right? And we're gonna get that very good question in a second. You see a black spot? It's where a worm is starting to form. You have to get rid of it. So they say, see, the Ramah said it's a black spot. Can't tell what it is. Just looks like a black spot to everybody else. The Ramah says you gotta get rid of it. Telling you is if it's you're gonna be able to tell that it's a worm. If it's gonna be a worm, you have to get rid of it already.
Okay. Here the worm came before a black spot.
What do you mean?
The orange.
By the orange?
And the orange just said that the orange jumps in and then he creates the stuff that we see.
Okay.
The opposite.
Maybe it's a little bit of an opposite case. Okay. But the idea is, sounds like he's saying that even if it's just a spot, to me it just looks like a spot, it's still usher. I can't eat it even though it just looks like a spot to me. It doesn't look like anything. Okay. So, you would only think that's a proof if you just saw the Ramah, what the Ramah says. But the truth is, that, as you probably know, the Shulchan Aruch was not meant to be a sefer that you looked at by itself. Okay, the Shulchan Aruch is really a summary of a longer sefer that the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah wrote. Okay, this is called the Beis Yosef and the Daki Moshe. Okay, they wrote a much longer sefer with much more details on the Torah. And this is the shortened version. This is the summary. It's called the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, but we have the Shulchan Aruch. It's meant to be the summary of their longer sefer called Beis Yosef and Daki Moshe. Okay, and if you look here, you find out that the Ramah didn't make up this din. He didn't make this din up about black spots. It comes from a Tshuvas HaRashba. Okay, that's where it comes from, a Tshuvas HaRashba. And that's source number 6. Source number 5. Okay, the Rashba says, so I have part of the Rashba quoted over here, but it's even more than what he says. He says like this. The Rashba is describing this spot that the Ramah is talking about. The Ramah is quoting the Rashba. That's who he's quoting. And the Rashba, when he describes this black spot, he says, V'nikah roshei shel rachash. You can tell where the head of this bug is. That is to say, it was recognizable. It's not a black spot as, like, looks on your oranges over here. It was a spot, you could even tell where its head was. He says, V'kama pa'amim nisinu, a number of times we tested it. We scooped it out of the fruit. U'manichet al tziporin etzba, we put it on our fingernail. V'hu roichesh v'hoyoch, and it crawled away. That is to say, is they were able to determine it was an insect, not because they looked under magnifying glass. Rashba didn't have magnifying glasses. They were able to tell because they tested it, they scooped it out, put it on their nail, and it crawled away. So the way they knew it was a bug was not because they read something from the University of Florida that they told them that those things on there are insects. It's because it was obvious to everybody that it was an insect. You just had to look at it a little better, scoop it out, and give it a chance. You could tell that it was an insect. So that was an insect that they got to learn that black spots that look like this on these foods were usher because they've all seen them crawling. But it's even more than that. The truth is that the Rashba is talking about has nothing to do with the size of insects. That's the truth. I didn't quote it here. But the Rashba and the Tshuva is talking about a completely different shaila. It has something to do with what Lance was saying. Okay, completely different shaila, which is, the din is, and with this I'll head towards the end. We're skipping some parts, we'll head towards the end. The din is that insects, to much to people's surprise, are not all asr. There are many insects that are mutter. The Torah tells us that for an insect to be asr, it has to do certain things. For example, a land-based insect is not asr unless it crawled on the ground. If an insect that's not a flying insect, not a water insect, a land-based insect is not usher until it crawls on the ground. So, for example, the reason why the bugs in the raisins are mutter is because those bugs are born in the raisin after the grape is detached from the tree, and the bugs never leave the raisin. That is to say, those are bugs, that land-based bugs, that never crawled on the ground. Those bugs are mutter. The Torah says you're allowed to eat those bugs.
How did they get into the raisin?
The mother Drosophila lays them over there. Lays them microscopically.
When
the mother lays them, I'm answering your question. When the mother lays them, the eggs are microscopic. The eggs that are laid are microscopic. Those are eggs that you can't see. So when they first become visible to the eye, is inside of a fruit that's off the ground, and they're not usher. They only become usher when they would crawl on the ground. They never leave the raisin. They stay. That's what they stay.
In other words, they could possibly leave the raisins later and go.
They do eventually. They do.
You don't eat them.
That's correct. They grow up. They become. They metamorphosize. They become something else and fly off and become something else. Then they go to the next waste. Great to lay an egg. But as it is, so that bug is mutter. So there are rules.
These things in the oranges.
So again, I'll get into the oranges in a second. So there are bugs. There are bugs that are mutter. And the question the Rashba is talking about is the following. What happens if you have an insect that is, when the Torah says it has to crawl on the ground, does that mean, the bug has to have crawled on the ground. Does it mean that it has to have physically crawled on the ground? Or does it mean that it has to be capable of crawling on the ground? Okay, that is to say, the question is, does it have to be that it's developed enough that it's able to crawl, it is on the ground, and it's developed enough that it can crawl, so to speak, it has legs, and it can crawl, and it's on the ground. Or does the criteria of the Torah is that it has to have physically crawled from one spot to another spot? So the Rashba says, he holds, it only has to have been capable of crawling. That's what the Shaila is. And the Shulchan Aruch and Rambam are talking about that question. This Shaila, what does it mean to crawl on the ground? And the Rashba says, it's enough that it's capable of crawling. And he says, I can prove to you that it's capable of crawling because we've scooped it out and it actually crawled. That shows you that it's capable of crawling. In the spot that it is, it's impossible to crawl. That's what the Rashba says. The spot that it's in is too tight. There's no room for the bug to crawl. But it's capable of crawling. It has the feet to crawl. And that's the Shailam, the Ramah, and the Mechaber. It's a Machlokes. It's right there in Shulchan Aruch, between the Mechaber and the Ramah, as to whether something that's capable of crawling, is it mutter or aser? Excuse me, the Rashba is saying is that it's aser. He's not talking about the size. It's not what the Shailam was about. And as we saw, the Rashba says, the size is a big enough size that you could see it crawl. That you could see it. Its head was recognizable. You could tell that it was alive. It was a completely different child, not relevant to the size of bugs that are also. Okay.
But the insects that are in the raisins?
In the raisins.
We say are mutter because they are not even capable of crawling?
No. Or? Because, yes, let's say that. Okay. Put that child aside. Okay. It's a child. I'm not telling you the whole story. Okay. But it had part to do with why it's mutter, is because then they didn't crawl. I'm just going to ask you to put it on the side. Okay. We talk about raisins. I'm happy to talk to you about raisins. I have to say something. The people who found the bugs in the raisins were not the first one. Okay, there's a Taz who talks about bugs and raisins. His mom talks right about these bugs and raisins, and he says, why the mutter? So it's not like they discovered America. It's mama shatas, okay? It's not like that's it. You can keep eating raisin bran. Okay, now, so I'm going to skip to our end here, just because time-wise. And that's as follows. I said to you was, at first when I asked you whether the bugs should be mutter asur, that these spots on your oranges or the little bugs on your strip, you said, of course it's mutter. How can it be asur? I can't see it. I can't tell what it is. But then I told you that maybe it's asur, or maybe it's mitz chasidus to not eat it, because it used to be that it was moving around and everyone could tell that it was alive. Everyone could tell that it was alive, so then it was asur then. So now when it dies or it stops crawling, so now we say, I might not be responsible for eating it, but it would be a good idea to avoid it, because Hashem really doesn't want me to have it. He's not going to hold me responsible, because there was nothing I could have done about it, but you could see the value to not eating it, because really Hashem doesn't want you to eat it. And now we'll go back to why it should be mutter. And that is as follows. I just mentioned to you, bugs are not inherently usher. Pigs are usher. You can't eat pigs, no matter what. Bugs are not always usher. Bugs are sometimes mutter, and sometimes usher, based on what? Based on whether Hashem says, eat them or don't eat them. Bugs are not flat out usher.
We're capable, not capable.
It depends on things. It depends on, for example, if it crawled or didn't crawl. Okay, I told you the first seven halachas in Sim Pei Dalet are about which bugs are mutter usher. What are those halachas full of? All kinds of examples of bugs that are mutter and that are usher. Bugs that you could see with your eyes. Okay, bugs, you could drink water that has bugs in it, and those bugs could be mutter. Depending on where you got the water and under the right circumstances, the bug, you're allowed to eat it with the bug inside of it. That is to say, a bug is not usher because it's a bug. A bug is usher because Hashem says sometimes it's mutter and sometimes it's usher. So that helps us understand, how could it be that when the bug is crawling, he's usher, and then when he dies and I can't recognize it, it's mutter. It may be that it's not just that I'm not responsible for it, it's that Hashem gave the Torah to people. We should use our own capabilities to see the things that we're not allowed to eat. And if it comes to a point that it's not recognizable, not usher anymore. Hashem, now, in all those halachas, things can go from being mutter to being usher. But we're saying, well, maybe things go, so to speak, from being usher to being mutter. It's at Hashem's will, so to speak, that it's mutter usher. Like someone mentioned before, what happens if the bug lays an egg? The bug is usher, but the egg that it lays might be mutter. If the egg might become mutter, how did that happen? How did the bug that was usher have an egg that lay of egg that was mutter? It's quite a shiloh nach right now. How could the egg be mutter? How could it be mutter? I gave you one answer. How could it be that the egg? The answer really is that bugs. The status of a bug, is it mutter or usher, very much depends on. But I shouldn't decide, really. I mean, really, pigs are like that also. That's the truth. But in a pig, we see a pig is usher. Usher from beginning to end. But over here, I'm giving you as an example that you can see such a thing as a bug being mutter. There really are bugs that are mutter. And to go back to what someone mentioned before about tintamalev, there are achronim who say, it's a related question, which is, what happens if I follow the rules of the Torah? The Torah told me, for example, sometimes you can follow the roif. I'm going to give you an example of that. When you drink milk, do you ever have milk with a coffee?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. When you drink milk from your coffee, how do you know that the cow that gave that milk wasn't a trefa? Right. Some cows, when you shuck them, they're trefa. Probably 30% of the cows. 40% of the cows are trefas. So how do you know that the cow that gave you that milk wasn't a trefa? If a cow's a trefa, the milk that it gives is also not kosher. Not only can't eat the milk, you can't eat the... We didn't have eggs. There was no eggs here for breakfast. But chicken lays an egg. Maybe the chicken was a trefa. Okay? How can you eat it? No one checked to see if this animal's a trefa. How do you drink the milk? The answer is, the Torah tells us, follow the roif. The roif animals are not trefas. You're allowed to drink the milk without, and you assume that it's not from the trefa. So what happens, that means to say is, if someone has milk with a coffee every day of the week, okay, that means is, and let's say 10% of the cows are trefas. That means once every 10 days you drink 10 trefa milk. So do you think that when you come up to Shoreham, they're going to say to you, okay, Chaimel, okay, you drank coffee, 12,000 times in your life. Okay, you're responsible for 1,200 times that you drink trefa milk. What do you want from my life? I followed the rules. So it's not only am I not responsible because I followed the rules or to follow the roif, but there are those who say, there are chronim who say, there isn't even timtum aleif. It doesn't affect me because all that I do with mitzvahs is, Hashem told me what I'm supposed to do. If I follow the rules, I'm doing what I'm supposed to. If the rule is follow the roif is what I have to do. I don't have to do more than that. I'm following the rules. So over here, it's even easier to hear. Not only am I following the rules as in, I look at the spot. And to me, it doesn't look like anything, I'm allowed to eat it. But in bugs specifically, there are some bugs that are mutter and some bugs that are rusted. Such a concept of a mutter bug, there exists such a concept. So those who would say that it's mutter will say that when the bug is not recognizable to an average person not able to tell, that person not only is he not responsible for it, it's not even an usher bug. And let me just finish. And the others will say either that it's usher or the middle position, the more reasonable middle position, which is that it might be mitz chasidus. It might be that you're not held responsible, but we know Hashem doesn't want you to eat it. If there was some manner that you could have to avoid it, someone could teach you, some guy with, you know, bionic vision could teach you how to avoid it, then maybe you should listen to his direction and do what he has to do. Yes.